is have an application through and disclosing there may be some confidentiality. I'm assuming it's healthcare is what, or and or just
different, yeah,
okay.
Insurance, yeah.
Well, yeah, the question would be, you have a medical facility and you have a regular customer who you're very close with, who becomes an applicant for an application. I think that in that situation, that's a very good question. In that case, the right to healthcare confidentiality would overcome the need to disclose that at the hearing. I mean, that's a good question.
My question would be more toward the fact that it's land use in that aspect of, it's a client you represent as an agent on their business or something like that, because you're not, this decision isn't, possibly is not making you any money. It could actually lose it. I mean, if somebody voted, decided not to, but I mean, there's also some clients that like don't want to know, you know, want their confidentiality of who they work with on things. So that's where I guess the issue comes in, the fact we've had them come up and it hasn't been issues because it's just been rezoning and kind of stuff like that. So that was just my question on that. Cause at the end of the day, I mean, I get paid when we get paid. So I have a lot of conflicts, a potential conflict.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think if it's something that's just day-to-day business, day-to-day interactions with someone, at some point it becomes so attenuated that you don't need to disclose it as a potential bias. It's up to you. It's your decision whether to disclose or not. It's not a requirement of law. Now, the conflict of interest is a requirement of law, but the bias is not.
For sure. Well, and then also you mix that with the sort of unbiased treatment of both the applicant, the proponent, and the opponent, and it's always best to recuse yourself if that becomes a challenge, particularly if it's outwardly a challenge and somebody doesn't feel like they're getting, somebody feels that their opinion or the process is being discouraged, or that you might be showing a favor to one or the other, then just remove yourself from it.
If you're genuinely unbiased and your vote doesn't make the difference, then it doesn't matter if you're
Colonel.
Carla has a question.
Where's Carla? Where's she?
Did you have your hand up, Carla?
Oh, no. Sorry.
I did not have my hand up. Sorry. No, I have no questions.
It was
the
cursor.
It was my little cursor. Okay, thank you. Oh, yeah.
That's funny.
This was super helpful. I know it seems repetitive, redundant for people who have been on the planning commission. I just wrote a page of notes. I've heard this lots of times, and I always learn something new. I think our planning commission does a really good job of it.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with everyone I work with in Eastern Oregon, and I don't want to say I'm surprised, but I've been very impressed. You guys run meetings well, the notifications, just the knowledge. Some of the smaller communities heavily rely upon your county planning departments. Hopefully in the future that'll be something that that may change, and you know, maybe we'll get some more planners over here in Eastern Oregon that want to either regionally serve and or come into some of these small communities. So
it's great to have an opportunity to have you and Gordon here. Brian's been on a long time. I've been on off and off, but maybe more than 20 years since I first started. and since the beginning, We've been frustrated in Eastern Oregon about the land use rulings as to the preservation of agricultural land that probably pertain to the outskirts of Portland and valuable farm ground being taken out of production. And at the same time, you talk about a shortage of housing. And when we take land out of production up here, oftentimes, if we take 5 acres out of production up here, That means that we can't have a cow there for 2 months. That's a loss of use. It's not a significant loss of agricultural production. And there's a big demand up here, and also a housing shortage in Eastern Oregon, and an opportunity for growth and preservation of our economies that we like to drive. This 160-acre land use thing just does not fit, and it's been a frustration for me forever and ever to not be able to take ground that's not productive and responsibly divide that ground up into 5 and 10 acre lots so that we can make these towns more thriving. 100%. And so how do we get around that? I mean, I've been wanting to have some action on that for 20 years and we haven't really gained much.
So we got a 10 acre residential, which is way too big. It should be rural residential zone. It's way too big. It should be, nobody needs 10 acres, especially of class 7 soil. You got a bigger rock pile. I mean, is what that equates to. But what it's done in our community is it's created scarcity, and it's driven the prices out of it. I just saw a house the other day sell that was a $70,000 40s house for $180,000. There is nothing, and it's really hard to do anything because, I mean, in this community especially, we have a landowner that has the
majority
has. Most of the UGB owns it, doesn't want to do it. So all of a sudden the UGB is taken out and then we have to go, you know, really the only way I can see to do it, which is way worse, is go take a 640, a square mile, split it into four 160s and put a house on all four. And I think that is a way worse use of our fields than being able to go in and say, all right, let's take 10 acres and make, you know, 5 homes out.
And first of all, you know, as a landowner, we're not going to let go of 160 acres, you know, or a 640. We're just not going to. But if you have a 5 or 10 acre lot that's, you know, next to the road that's not of much value, then you might consider doing that. And it's really detrimental. I mean, we haven't made 5 acre lots up here in this part of Morrow County since 1970.
South Morrow County never has no rural residential exception area.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a few up by the golf course, and we call them ocean views up here. If you have a piece of property that has 10 acres and it has a creek going through it, we call that an ocean view. And they just don't make any more of them. But there's a huge demand for them. And because of the scarcity, as Brian said, they're worth a lot of money, but that the value prohibits people from being able to buy them. And if we could make more of them, it would really help preserve Heppner, Lexington, and Ione as a community, because that's really what people want oftentimes, is to have a little bit of a grant ground to put a shop on, to maybe have a horse or something. And you don't, whether you have 5 acres or 10 acres or 20 acres, it doesn't matter as far as the condition of that ground when you run an animal on it, because it can't sustain any of it. So anyway, I wanted to get that out to the two of you while you're here.
So I will say the issue or the concern is not just here.
Well, I know.
It's all throughout East Oregon. I mean, in other parts of Oregon also. Willamette County, very similar situations. Yeah. Enterprises.
Ontario. County.
We did, was that last biennium, we did a buildable lands inventory and...
For Lexington, Ione, and Heppner.
Correct.
Uh-huh. I don't want to interrupt and sidetrack you, because I want to let you finish. But we don't want to turn this into Idaho, where every half acre has a $10,000, you know, dilapidated. We're talking about responsible land use development. Okay, that's not detrimental to the community.
So we did do. Was it a full-blown buildable lands inventory? It was just more of an analysis of existing land.
And that focus was on Goal 9 economic.
Oh, was it development? Okay, so I came in like midpoint on that.
But the county, not very many years ago, did a buildable lands inventory, and at that time there were enough lands, but they're not available.
Right, that's
a dilemma statewide.
That is, and what you're doing is a lot of the larger property owners that own right out on the outside or right next to the urban growth boundary don't want to sell and or develop. Mm-hmm. And some of those are actually being used for agricultural uses and they're larger parcels.
Yeah.
So Gordon, I don't know, do we want to talk about anything that's going through, like, the legislation right now? Or
like the streamlined UGB process for small cities?
Well, I think the one thing is that if there is property in an urban growth boundary that the owner doesn't want to sell or is just sitting on, one option is to remove that property from the urban growth boundary and put in another property that wants to. That's obviously, for one thing, it'd be controversial, but it might also spur the person who's just sitting on the property to decide to do something. But the other thing, though, is that we are looking at, we have proposed to the legislature, or we hopefully will propose that we do look at something called non-resource lands, which is allowed by state law, but is very poorly defined. It seems to me that would be an issue, especially in eastern Oregon, where there might, you know, there's agricultural land that's range land and it's class 6-7 soils that's not suitable for irrigation, why not allow rural home sites on land like that? And so we propose that to the legislature as something that we'd like to work on to have better rules on that, because right now local governments could look at that issue, but it's very controversial. And right, you know, for instance, a developer in Deschutes County proposed basically a luxury residential subdivision on land that was similar to this, and tried to use that, and it got appealed to the Oregon Court of Appeals. And so we'd like to get some rules that would allow, I think that, you know, and once again, it's a situation of the rules are being, it used to be the rules were all about Western Oregon and how applicable they are in Eastern Oregon. Now it's the rules that apply around Bend shouldn't apply to the rest of Eastern Oregon.
That's my whole point right there. That's what I was just going to say. You're lumping in Morrow County with Deschutes County.
Yep.
It's not quite the same.
No, I acknowledge that completely.
And that's the thing, you know, we get, you know, really punished, and our communities are prohibited from going because people do want to live, you know, like I said, in these ocean view lots. They want 5 acres
every week that it calls.
Yeah, and that's what we need to continue to thrive. And young people want to move back here. And frankly, probably all three towns have their Lexington. I own. There isn't a lot of suitable houses that's desirable that people want. So it's like, well, if I could get 5 acres or 10 acres out of town and I could build a home, mm-hmm. I mean, you could just, it would really help.
And what I'm hearing
you're
you say.
You're from John Day, so you know what I'm talking about. Right. Or Ben and John Day, it's the same thing there.
Right. You're talking about serving your local population, your
village. Yes.
So, I mean, and we did run into that when we were taking a look, is that you don't even have adequate housing for people to come back that grew up here that want to come and live here.
No place if you want a doctor to move here,
there's not a house that meets, right?
I'm getting more interested, personally, I'm more interested in this topic, and I've tried to bring it up with the agency recently. One thing I did analysis, and, you know, for all the talk of how people in Oregon are supposed to be living in urban growth boundaries and all that, 19% of Oregon's population lives outside of urban growth boundaries, and those percentages are higher than that generally in eastern Oregon. Mm-hmm. So that's a sign that we, as a state, need to look at. You can argue whether there's a need for that kind of housing. There's certainly a demand for that kind of housing, and it's a different kind of demand that you would see, you know, in the high-priced hills around in the Portland metropolitan area versus or the, you know, the area around Bend and Deschutes County versus what you see in Morrow County or Harney County or Bulawa County. And it's a very, I think it's another sign that you know, we do try to differentiate as much as possible, and maybe we don't do a good enough job to what's going on in eastern Oregon versus, or other, perhaps southern Oregon as well, versus the rest of the state. And so I think we will, I can commit that I certainly will be pushing those issues to look at the differentiation and what that means for communities
preservation, like, you don't want to deplete your preservation of agricultural land. Like I said, most of this county up here is between 20 and 30 acres per AUM. So you understand what that means. It takes 30 acres to run cow. So if we're not giving up a lot of ag use value if we take that 30 acres and put 6 homes on it. Yeah. Now we got to run one less cow in Morrill County.
Yeah, that one cow produces $300 of income per year, and it takes 30. I mean, it's literally $10 an acre, $8 an acre,
right.
Five. And, but they call it high-value farmland, and yeah. It is well, not.
We wouldn't call that high-value farmland, but some of the property...
It would if there was deep enough soil on it.
Yes, but usually the issue we've run into with looking at rezoning to create some rural residential 10-acre exception is there's some of that that's way out of town, but it's hard to create... 51% or greater, that's that class 7 soil. Because
right.
It might have some 5 and 6, and then it's not considered non-farm. And that makes the Goal 3 exception almost impossible.
What's the thinking of 10 acres? Why does it have to be actually so much?
Because
the average...
that's the safe harbor. You can apply to
right.
go below 10.
That's a lot
but then
for
you
a person
have
to take care of. It,
it
really is.
It is. You can apply. We adopted that 10-acre zone. We also have a 2-acre zone. So you could apply to rezone property for 2-acre, but you also have to justify a Goal 14 exception. But maybe that's possible if those 2-acre parcels really are entirely class 7 soils. You might not have
you know,
a lot of time.
I would ask you to, it's a very interesting discussion, I'd ask you to put it in writing and send something to our agency and our director. I think that the more we hear these kind of things and, you know, arguments why it's a good idea to do something differently, I think that might make a difference.
I
pledge to do my best to push that point of view.
Okay.
Gordon, one more thing. When I graduated from school here in 1981, there was 55 kids in my class. I think, how many are in the senior class that happened this year? A dozen?
12?
A dozen.
Yeah.
So we have 20% of the young people going to schools here, and, you know, it's a downward trend. I mean,
yeah. And it's not just us economically, it's a big part of Eastern Oregon. There really isn't a lot of economic development going on near a lot of these towns, but they are desirable. People do want to live here because of what they have to offer from a lifestyle perspective, and so we're essentially, our economy is built upon being a bedroom community. Well, that's great, except for we don't have any opportunity to build any bedrooms,
right.
You know? So.
One thing I learned since working here is with that the state laws actually separate out Eastern Oregon versus Western Oregon in some regards, and one of them is like with solar development, that we can do solar on high-value farmland here, but we can't do it on the west side. And I think that's sort of, I don't know, I think it's contrary.
It's ironic, really.
Ironic, right.
And you take, when you put a solar facility in, it's gone forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care if they say the lifespan's 20 or 30 years,
right,
but we can't do that for housing.
You're going to be hearing from us about
yes.
solar facilities. We've been tasked by the legislature to try to figure all that out. It's going to be a big... controversial mess.
I didn't ask to be on the rack, but I hope I get a notice for the meeting.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll share it to others.
Because that's an acknowledgement but on the state's
right.
part that they don't value Eastern Oregon high-value farmland the same way they do Western farmland. But if I own a 200-acre EFU parcel and I can sell it to a solar farm for $10 an acre, or I can keep it and do nothing with it, but I can't partition out five
housing.
Small lots
yeah.
for housing.
Yeah.
What's the impact on that 200 acres of putting in 20 houses versus a solar farm?
Versus a 5,000 acre solar farm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it deserves a lot more attention for sure.
So when Commissioner Finch asked about the hierarchy, it does feel like Goal 3 is held in higher esteem than Goal 10 in Eastern Oregon. Because we're the ground central for solar development,
yeah.
and there's a lot of wonderful attributes about it, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's a great lease income opportunity for
the
landowner, right? So,
I think the issue is, Goal 3 and Goal 10 are equal. The problem is we have a mindset that Goal 10 is housing that's developed within
yes.
urban growth boundaries.
Yes. For sure.
And maybe that's not the the way we should be looking at that issue in smaller towns in eastern Oregon. And so that's something to consider.
I mean, if the governor's really concerned.
That's a conversation I'd like to have our department have.
I love that. And I know that I listened to Hillary's presentation, wonderful presentation on all of the ORS 215, and really I was probably a minority voice, but there is there's a lot of merit to protecting farm ground, but I think the outcome of that is that the way we permit certain uses is going to be more restrictive and fewer opportunities for things like non-farm dwellings. And I made the case as a committee member that non-farm dwellings have a lot of merit, and we do not have conflicts between non-farm dwelling people who live in a non-farm dwelling house and the farmers. It's maybe it's because we don't have the critical mass, but I think I don't know of those conflicts any place in the 10
Eastern
counties.
I've done five of them down there around Lexington. No trouble. Yeah. But when I do one, then they make me sign it. You can do two, but you can never do it again.
And that's not going to get easier under the new rules. But Gordon, I think it's worth, I really appreciate that you've been at the department and for as long as you have, and you're willing to listen to this and engage in that kind of discussion.
It really is, in this part of the county, the number one issue. It really is inability to build new houses here, because we like I said, we don't have places in town to do it, and that's not the demand. These younger people particularly that come here and out, you know, it's great that they can work remotely and do all that, but they want to have 3 or 5 acres out of town and have their space and have their shop, and that's the demand. But there's X number of those houses. I mean, I get calls all the time. Will you sell me? We have a little house like that.
Even in the last few years.
5 calls a year.
Post-pandemic, when we bought our house in John Day, we bought our first house, it was half the price of what you could buy the same house on the west side, for the exact same house in the exact same lot. It was substantially less expensive. That the cost of living in Eastern Oregon was significantly cheaper. It's not that way anymore. That because of the
shortage.
Houses out here are close to, if not the same, for the same acreage.
If they have a little acreage, especially.
Yeah. As you would be paying in Salem or Eugene or the suburbs of Portland. And that's causing a detrimental impact to the economies of Eastern Oregon as well.
The ocean view.
Sure. But even suburban little houses are close to the same cost as suburban houses on a quarter acre on the west side.
And then it's average price. What's the average price of a new home in Boardman right now, Nancy or
Half
Carla?
Half a million, probably. It's wild.
It's like $350,000 to $400,000.
A house in Boardman.
Yes.
So right now, where they were in the right around $200,000 to $350,000, they've jumped up to $330,000 to $500,000.
That's ridiculous.
But that's a Rambler. That's a two or three bedroom.
There are townhouses in Boardman for sale for $500,000.
The house I'm talking about, they bought for $60,000 a year ago, put $30,000 in it, put it on Facebook, and had 6 people look at it, sold the next day for $180,000.
Oh my goodness.
In Hepner.
And it's probably a 1940s house. I don't even know it's got a foundation.
Oh boy.
It's been building for a while, but the last 3 years, exponentially. Mm-hmm. And I think it's partially because people are more, like, actually really wanting to move to rural areas.
And I mean, we have really wanted. Interest rates didn't get to 7 or 8%.
Yeah.
Still at 3 or 4%.
Yeah. So I'm hearing an appetite to look at Goal 10 in our comp plan. We did some amendments to it a couple years ago when we adopted the RR10, and we can do that. We can do that again.
You know, it's funny is every time we bring this up, everybody seems to be
agree.
Right. Everybody, like we do the study, we find out, it just seems to never yield. And then I look where Mary's at, and that it's a problem. I mean, what we're talking about there is a problem around Boardman with because of the water and all the other things. Like we don't have that problem here. There is no water table. Our water's gone.
Or more.
We got about a foot of soil, 200 feet of basalt, and then some water. It's a different situation.
And rattlesnakes.
Yeah, rattlesnakes.
And I don't have that problem either, Brian. My well's good, just so you know.
Glad to hear that.
I know when we worked on the 10 acres too, people were worried about it was going to happen too much. It is so expensive to build on land. You're gonna have also the people that have a house in town, they're gonna wanna sell it to build. Right.
So
and you're
gonna
drill open,
well.
So you're gonna, yeah.
Septic,
so it's not that you're gonna have.
I can cost $75,000.
Yeah, you're not gonna have 100 houses in 1 year built in one place. And so tying it to the 10 acres just makes it even harder to.
Yeah.
It's a good start, I mean, but nobody's.
And it's definitely for an upper income household. Mm-hmm. It's not the panacea for affordable housing, but what I've heard, particularly from people in Heppner, is you have doctors you're trying to recruit to town who don't have.
Got kids that want to move back.
Oh,
but the people still live in the house that they bought 40 years ago because it's affordable or there's no other option.
There's no other option.
So you don't have the people moving out of middle housing to something different. And that doesn't open it up for our younger population.
My favorite thing to do, Gordon, is to drive up State Line Road in Mountain Free Water. Between Mountain Free Water and Walla Walla, and drive up State Line Road, and on the right is wheat fields, pretty much, although there's a vineyard here and a vineyard there, and on the left are all these 2 acre and 3 acre little houses. And it's just like, that's what's wrong. And by the way, the stuff on the right in Mountain Free Water is still fantastic ground, so I shouldn't compare it to what's happening here in Morrow County.
So can,
but it's, you can, yeah. It's orchard.
I know a little bit about that, and That's the entire inventory of Walla Walla County's rural residential exception area. They don't have it any other place in the county.
Okay.
It's right there. And they have terrific water problems. I mean, huge water battles. So people drilling wells, conflicts between farmers and rural residences.
Traffic issues also.
Yeah, huge probably traffic issues. Anyway. It's beautiful, and the realtors from Mountain Free Water always let the planners know it's a real problem. But they're living that. It's a real challenge right now.
Well,
so it looks really nice, and those are some fantastic homes also that you see out there, but it's not sustainable is the other thing to think about. That's why the other thing about 10 acres is you can have your couple horses and whatever, and you're not going to have that neighborhood conflict like you have when you have little one-acre
like
pieces.
That, but none of us want, like I said, what you see when you cross the border and go into Idaho, and it's just quarter acre, mm-hmm. you know.
Right.
Not
right.
that.
We yeah.
want sustainable, yeah. responsible growth.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I'm not surprised.
Isn't that nice?
I mean, and sometimes you see things on the news or Facebook, and you see this large group of people that claim that they want it to be like Idaho, and I'm like, no, that's why we're here, because we love Oregon and the way
yeah,
that it
I like
is
Oregon.
And the protections
yeah.
that we have, so
yeah.
that's good to hear. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Gordon, we and Don will take you up on your offer if we want to have a work session. We have a full agenda already for March, mm-hmm. but if we have a lighter agenda, we'll have a brainstorm about.
This has been good. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And actually,
thank you.
Internally,
it's been a pleasure to talk to you all.
Thank you, Gordon.
Still
thanks,
a little
Gordon.
Upside down about this whole conflict of interest. I don't think it's been following that close.
All right. Well, thank you all. I appreciate
thanks,
it.
Gordon. Thanks, Gordon.
On it, but it's a candid discussion. I really do. Thank you very much.
We really appreciate you, Gordon.
And if
thank
you want,
you.
In the minutes, you can we just say C
so
packet?
I think so.
Okay.
If that's okay with you, you bet.
Yes,
you bet.
I would. I mean, there is no reason for this to show up in our minutes. That perfectly.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Thing. So I would like it to just see.
Boom, you got a pass.
See,
right?
Yeah. Please see packet. Please see that.
Get the same
okay, thank you. That sounds great.
Okay. The last 3 years.
Okay, do we, other business?
I don't think we have any other business. We might brief you another time about the code enforcement issues. And you heard from all those people, and we had a meeting earlier today. It's hugely challenging, hugely challenging.
Yeah, okay.
And we're gonna work on maybe offering some master planning, but.
I really like to discuss reading that.
I wouldn't do that now. Except to say, some of those code amendments that we had in December, my recommendation might be that the board kick them back to you, a couple of them, because a few other issues have been raised that honestly, Yeah, we thought we vetted them really thoroughly. We chatted with Don about it yesterday, I think.
Yeah, I think, but I too, and I haven't got back to you on that, but I think there's two slides in here specifically that might be a good thing to, when you take a look at.
Never rush the legislative process.
But just, well, and like looking at ministerial versus quasi-judicial and the review process and how one's not appealable.
Yes, that too.
I mean, I think that's something that really would be good for the Planning Commission to really absorb that. And kind of understand when you guys are looking at any potential code amendments that may elevate a process or land, or make it a land use process versus a ministerial.
A ministerial. So ministerial is.
Is type one. Building permit. Sign permit.
Sign.
Yeah.
We don't see it. You
yeah.
Do it
yeah, that's right. Or now I'm even wondering, sometimes a pretty simple residential zone, gonna have build a house, that's as new, anything beyond that,
yeah,
might need to provide a public notice for it, and we really just haven't. So,
I mean, there's things like home businesses and things that you may not want.
Change of use.
Not, yeah, change of use, right. If it's a less intense use, you probably don't want to take it. You could do those ministerially. Mm-hmm. But
it seems like a lot of work, but it's probably worth vetting again, because the Planning Commission has a closer... and we might... I think you have a more experience and closer appreciation, and we can bring those back again.
I just think it'd be difficult. I think it's difficult to think that you would not have a formal land use process for a brand new commercial or industrial type use, because of the implications and the potential impacts that those uses and structures could have on the zone, the adjacent uses, etc.
Okay.
Correspondence.
Oh,
in your packet to read.
Monthly, yes. We all add a little bit to that monthly update, by the way.
Are there any public comment? Does everybody have any questions? Anything? We good?
So you... I'm sorry.
Oh, you...
Oh, my God. You were saying that. People in...
this is only a second meeting.
You met with the people in Portland?
Yeah, this morning.
Was that productive? Like, no.
It was painful. We all crawled in our fetal position when we went back to our office.
It was the folks that were upset about the
commercial trucks thing
last week. Last
so you
week.
Met with poor people or what?
No, it was the property owners.
No, the property
owners.
They just want their own version of paradise, and it's not going to be one size fits all. There's probably going to be multiple things to do, and at the the people we invited to come talk with us were the people who either presented testimony last month of the Planning Commission meeting, or they've received a notice. You know, Landon's kind of filling in for compliance planner because Katie's resigned. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, I did not know.
Yeah. It's really difficult, and there it's a real conundrum because they bought their piece of property, they want to keep their commercial truck there. It's not good for the roads, but the roads are in a terrible shape. They don't have good drinking water. They're all old septic systems. So we have a meeting with the city and the county coming up to talk about, you know, what could we do there to master plan it. But in the meantime, you know, there are plenty of other things going on in our community, but allowing those. So my point was, out of about 70 parcels in that subdivision, between 12 and 15 have commercial trucks, and they want to keep them there, but most of the other people don't, but the other people who don't want them there also don't want to speak up about it. So it's really our responsibility to...
So you think there's only 15?
Parcels.
Then I mean that have commercial trucking, essentially, operations on them.
And they want us to either look the other way or rezone their property, which would be spot zoning, which would just perpetuate this whole issue.
What do you see as the outcome? What do you think is going to...
Yeah, that I don't know. It's really discouraging. I don't know. And we're looking, you know, we've got a list of options,
there's a realtor in the city limits in Boardman who is just renting spaces in his industrial property, and one person moved out there. $50 a month, but these other people don't want to pay $50 a month to store their truck.
Well, then at some point,
that's the problem, isn't yeah. it? Is it? I mean, I think that maybe there
so
is a
solution.
So
when they can't, then they will.
But
yeah, so.
I mean, to me, it's like that. Those trucks are essential to the port, and there really isn't a port without trucks to a certain extent. So maybe the port's going to have to step up and help pay for some of this truck storage.
So it's actually,
you
know, yeah.
Maybe they can find some funding somewhere.
Well, that's the point. They're willing to subsidize certain industries and not others, but maybe the port's going to have to step up and subsidize some land for these truckers to park their trucks on. That's what I think. I mean, they've subsidized other things, so that's something that I think about.
It's an interesting thought. That's kind of, I think you as a citizen can say that. As a staff person, I can't make that recommendation.
Yeah. No, this is my citizen.
No, for okay. sure, for sure. But I'm just being really honest. So I talked to the port director today. She came downstairs and I said, "Are you willing to talk?" And she wasn't really comfortable. I totally get that. I don't blame her. And they have said a couple of times that they don't want to rent property to, you know, 15 different trucking outfits. But if somebody came in and wanted to lease a piece of property, they would entertain that. But then these people don't want to work together. They're all, I mean, it's, you know, we get it. We're all kind of independent. They don't want to lease land. They just want to keep it on their own property. So
they're all in competition.
I get it. Yeah.
And then there's a huge difference between the trucking operation who owns multiple trucks and people work for them, and then the one-off person. Mm-hmm. They might own one or two trucks and they and one of their kids drive a truck.
Yeah.
And they don't have the means to go out and buy another piece of property just for their one or two trucks, right?
Yeah.
So we're trying to figure out, just informally, this isn't a bad idea. We had a home occupation permit that we revoked, the Planning Commission revoked a year ago, and super nice people, we found them another piece of property. Yay, that's like a win-win, right? Or they found it, you've approved it, the Board of Commissioners has their second hearing next week. What do you think about a trucking business as a home occupation if they have maybe one or two trucks? Would you be inclined to approve them in a residential zone?
Use.
Not if it's 14 out of 70. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be hard.
That's good feedback for us because they want to rezone it,
I mean,
like rezone one piece.
So. I think an option at $50 to store it is not a bad option.
What if it's one truck and just one truck and trailer? I have two people. One is going to retire next year, one's going to retire in 5 years. They just want to keep their truck there until they retire and sell out.
It seems hard on the neighbors, the diesel engine running at 6 in the morning. I wouldn't want to live next to it.
Yeah, that's when my husband starts his truck at 5 o'clock in the morning next time.
I don't have any neighbors.
Now that sounds a little personal.
Yeah. There's my bias.
There's your bias, yeah.
Maybe.
There is
you
your bias.
You want to be sensitive to these people,
right.
I think we're trying to be
it's
sensitive
trying,
to people that are
hard.
Trying, you know, supporting the port and the industry and trying to make a living, but at the same time you want to be sensitive to the people that just live there and are live there because they want to have a rural residential.
Yeah.
And those that don't want to speak
I would
up.
Love to do master planning for West Glen. I think it'd be awesome. It's not something that class you do, especially without strong landowner driving force,
mm-hmm.
like wanting it to happen. But I think it'd be so cool to get them in the same room and have them talk about, do we want sidewalks? Do we want streetlights? Do we want water, sewer infrastructure? What is important to us as a community, and how can we plan for 20 years from now instead of just 5 years from now or tomorrow?
And these are all outside the urban growth boundary, right?
All of them are. This one particular neighborhood is in the urban growth boundary.
And you still administer the land use for that?
We do, except for one
part of it. Yeah, some of it's outside
the urban growth boundary. Is that what you're talking about?
The West Glen, yeah.
West Glen, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
If you did all that stuff, the property value would probably go through the roof.
Right.
If you had sidewalks and things.
Yeah, and I think there's some appetite for it.
It sounds like that was another concern of theirs, that their taxes going up.
Yeah, they're concerned with taxes going up if the neighborhood's too bad.
Well, the rezoning that may also create, wouldn't that potentially?
Oh, yeah. And we've
been, it could be a commercial.
Mostly Landon and Daisy, there's one owner in particular that we've spent multiple kind of informal pre-application meetings talking about what that would mean.
Yeah,
going from residential to commercial is going to really increase your taxes there.
But just because we have, again, just because we have one or two voices that are saying we don't want improvements, we don't want our property values to go up, we don't want more taxes, but we might, there might be 20 other people who want those things and see the value.
So once we get fully staffed, I think our next step is to have a neighborhood-wide meeting that's not couched as we're talking to you about your
And we might start it out with like an online survey they can fill out, or we can mail them like a survey link and they can talk about those preliminary things of what they want for their neighborhood. But again, I think it's something that we don't have capacity for.
Yeah, we don't have capacity right now for it.
Did y'all put the citations on hold then?
We did. But, and we had this idea that actually our code allows it to have like a written agreement that says we won't issue a citation as long as you show you're actively looking for another property, et cetera, et cetera. And, but we'd like to bring everybody in compliance with by the end of the year, no later than the end of 2025. But that's a long time.
Yeah. They were still upset at that.
And they were still upset at that, yeah.
That's the thing. My personal opinion is if there is a solution, it's going to require the port to come in and take the lead on it and provide some land to the truckers at not a lot of cost. If you really want to solve that problem, because they're not going to go buy a $50,000 piece of property and put the trucks on. In reality, it's just not going to happen. Like, but there, how are you going to have a port of Morrow if you don't have produce delivered in trucks?
Right.
Well, you're not.
Or Three Mile Canyon Farms.
Or whatever.
And I talked to the manager out at Three Mile Canyon Farms who isn't super crazy about it, but didn't say no about allowing some of those trucks, because they use them 2 or 3 months out of the year, a bunch of them, and then the rest of the year they park them, put them in a fenced area.
You gotta figure out how to do the fenced area and how to make sure that this guy's not taking that guy's battery out of his neighborhood.
That's exactly right, yeah.
That's right. You have a big fence around it and cyclone and gates,
sort of like renting a storage unit, but
RV parking or whatever,
And unfortunately, I think we let, it's some of those properties have gone on there a long, long time. That's why the brain idea that we had a year, almost 2 years ago now, because it was a year ago we presented to the Board of Commissioners, said, hey, what do you think about doing this neighborhood project instead of waiting till we have a complaint? We're here to help you clean up your neighborhood, and we'll issue you free junk slips and free landfill certificates. Here's a bunch of resources. We had a workshop where we said, here's a free voucher if you're income dependent to fix your septic system, all kinds of things. And we got like 2 people who wanted to participate.
I mean, and honestly, why would it occur to any of those people when they bought those properties that it was not proper to have a trucking business there? Because first of all, I don't think anybody told them they couldn't when they bought it.
No, I would say.
A lot of those people say that they were told they could, but I mean, not.
Yeah, I mean, why? Well, there you look around and there's one here and there's one there. Why would you think it's not permitted?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I see. Yeah, that's what you're saying.
Yeah. And so it's like, okay, this would be a good place to put my trucking business.
Isn't it right?
Daisy, do it.
I just
okay.
Okay.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.
I do want you all to know that Gordon is very serious.